Call to order the meeting of the Unalaska City Council for August 11th, 2026 at 6 PM. Have a roll call, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell. Ms. Coleman.
Here.
Mr. Longo.
Here.
Ms. Luby.
Here.
Mr. Chastain.
Here.
Mr. Tungo.
Here.
Mr. Tudikoff.
Here. Do we have a quorum? Councilman Bell's excused. I'd ask Councilman Longo to read our mission statement.
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you, Councilman Longo. Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. This time we'll recognize visitors, and I'll turn this over to the acting city manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Cameron Dean's going to come down and introduce a couple of visitors that are here from EPA Region 10. So go ahead, Cameron.
Thanks, Margie. So, Mayor Council, so I think Margie's included in our reports a couple times. We received a Swiffer grant from the EPA this last year to support removing some of the junk vehicles from the island. The Q Tribes also had a Swiffer grant for the last several years to support their recycling programs. So we're really excited that our federal partners from the EPA came out to visit the island and meet with us about those. So I'd like to introduce Melissa Winters. She's the Deputy Director of the Division of Land Chemicals and Redevelopment, and Annalise Eagleton. She's our Swiffer program officer we've been working with. And I think they wanted to say a couple words. Okay, thank you.
Hi, good evening. My name is Melissa Winters. Thanks so much for having us and hosting our visit. So I'll just say a few words about what we're doing in the Division of Land, Chemicals, and Redevelopment, and also the purpose of our visit. So in the Land, Chemicals, and Redevelopment, we do hazardous solid waste, underground storage tanks, and also brownfields for all of Region 10, which is Alaska, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington. The purpose of our visit this week is really about the solid waste infrastructure for recycling grants, but certainly have brownfields grants with the city and Cowlungan Tribe as well. And so I'll turn over to Annalise to just say a little bit more about the details of our visit, but just wanted to congratulate the city on this grant award. There were only 17 local governments that were selected nationally for a total of $58 million. So the city was one of those with a grant amount just under $4 million. So I want to start off and just congratulate you on that accomplishment, and we are really looking forward to working with you on this project.
Yeah, hi. As Melissa said, I'm Annalise Eagleton, and so I work in EPA Region 10 as well, primarily on solid waste, but I'm a project officer, so I do a lot of work with the solid waste infrastructure for recycling program. The purpose of the visit is really, it's just kind of a routine site visit and an opportunity to, meet with the individuals working on the project and, kind of see it firsthand. I'm also, as Cameron said, the project officer for the Cowlungan Tribe Swiffer Grant as well. So, kind of a similar opportunity to do the same with them. Just looking forward to, listening and learning and, if there's any, I know it's early in the project. It's only been a couple months since it was awarded, but just excited to hear how things are coming along, see the progress, if there's any, challenges or, areas where EPA can support. So, thanks for having us. Thanks for inviting us to the meeting tonight. Again, congratulations, because, it's a big deal. So thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate you being here in the community. Look forward to working with EPA on this recycling program and get it off the ground and running. We've got a pile out there you can go through. And, of course, the tribe, too. And anyone else, welcome to all those in the chambers and those that are on the telephone or team. Any further announcements? And right, thank you. I'll need a motion and a second to adopt the agenda, please.
Make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Longo, second by Councilman Luby. Are there any objections to adoption of the agenda? Hearing no objection, the agenda is adopted. I have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of the meeting held July 28, 2026.
I move to approve minutes of previous meeting, July 28, 2026.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungo, second by Councilman Longo. Are there any objections to adopting the minutes of the previous meeting, July 28, 2026? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted. Next on the agenda is the city manager's report. I turn this over to Marjorie for her report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Before I actually get to the report, as far as we know, Senator Dan Sullivan, and I was just informed Senator Lisa Murkowski, plan to visit Unalaska on Thursday, along with the Commandant of the Coast Guard. And they'll be on the ground for just a few hours, but we are planning a community meet and greet during that time. And I think it'll be around the lunch hour time, maybe 12:30, 1:30, something like that. But details have not been confirmed by our visitors, so hopefully we'll be able to get that out to the community tomorrow. We will advertise it, but if they are able to come and the visit's a go, it'll be Senators Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski and the Commandant of the Coast Guard, and we will have a community meet and greet. And also our the city's federal lobbyist, Sebastian O'Kelly, will also be here during that time, right at the planes fly. And Mayor and Council, if you'd like to meet with Mr. O'Kelly while he's here, please contact Carissa in the city manager's office and she can get that meeting scheduled for you. All right. So now onto the manager's report. We're available to hear any questions or comments that you might have, but I'd like to highlight the elementary school playground project. We anticipate the project to be completed this week. I walked through the playground yesterday with our PCR director, and it's really nice. It's got a wonderful playground area with several distinct play areas for various ages, as well as that multi-use field. They've done a great job, and it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful asset for the kids and the community. I think our business manager from PCR handed you all an invitation, but there is going to be a grand opening celebration next Wednesday. That's August 19th from 6:30 to 7:30, and we'd love to see you all there. And back to the manager's report. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to hear them.
Do you have any questions for Marjorie on our manager's report? All right, thank you. Forward to seeing Senator Sullivan and guests on Thursday. Council members are invited. Hopefully they'll all be there. Next, we've got the community input and announcements. This is time for members of the public to provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name. Roger.
Hello, Mayor and Council. Roger Blakely, PCR Director. It's good to be back with you. First announcement is the library is going to host a series of college preparation workshops for teens and parents in the coming months. These are free workshops. They are intended to help students who are interested in applying for small, selective, or alternative college. They will be presented by Melissa Cagle, a teacher at the Unalaska City School, for students 9th through 12th grade, and their parents and guardians are all welcome to sign up. The first workshop is entitled Exploring the College Landscape and Finding a Good Fit. It will be on Saturday, August 22nd from 1 to 2. Please call the library for more information. As Marjorie told you, our grand opening for the Eagle View Elementary School will be Wednesday, August 19th at 6:30. We also have a barbecue that night that will be sponsored by Resolve, and there we want to cook up some. It's going to be a pretty good celebration. We want you all to come be part of it. The last announcement we have is that this Saturday is our Heart of Illusions HOA event from 12 noon to 6. And we're going to make a call on Thursday whether the weather is going to be bad. So we're going to make that call Thursday. If the weather is not good, we're going to be at the high school, big gym, small gym, and lobby. But if it's not, it'll be down regular where it is. We encourage you all to come. We have a good cast of vendors. It'll be a good experience for everybody. So, anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Roger.
Good evening. Catherine McGlashan, Unalaska Visitors Bureau. For August, we have five cruise ships and a Tustamina. We have two more cruise ships. The World Residence at Sea is here from the 22nd through the 24th, so they're here for 3 days. And then the National Geographic Resolution is only in for 4 hours, but we'll tour them around and make sure they see everything that they can. September, it's our wind-down season, so five cruise ships and two Tustaminas in September. And then at the end of the season, we will give you actual numbers of guests that arrived and all the contacts we've had. So it's always exciting to see the end of the year. We also have the Japanese Maritime that has contacted us for October for tours, too. So we have a pretty busy September, October. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. Any further announcements of interest to the community in chambers, telephone, or Zoom?
No, sir. No one in Zoom wanted to make an announcement. No one in Zoom wanted to make an announcement, sir.
Okay, thank you. Next is a public comment on agenda items. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda if they do not want to wait until the item comes up on the regular agenda. To comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium, state your name, and use the microphone. Any public comment in chambers? Hearing none, city clerk, are there any written comments or anyone on Teams or phone?
No, sir. No public comments submitted.
Okay, thank you very much. Next item is our work session. We have a motion and a second to go into a workshop, please.
I make a motion to go into a work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle, second by Councilman Longo. Are there any objections to going into a work session? Hearing none, we are in a work session. 6:14 p.m. First item is the presentation of community support grant program guidelines. And I'll ask Assistant Acting City Manager, to introduce it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Before Cameron gets into the details on what we want to talk tonight about the Community Support Grant Program, I'd like to provide a little context for your discussion. The city's had this grant program in place for many years, and council's made a number of adjustments over time. The program provides some financial support to a variety of local organizations, and using a funding guideline that's intended to help establish the amount available for grants each year. There are really two issues that we want to bring forward tonight. The first is the financial reporting and audit requirements for grant recipients. The current threshold for requiring an audit has been in place for more than a decade, and the cost of audits has become a significant burden for some of the smaller grant recipients. Staff is recommending a tiered approach that would reduce those requirements for smaller awards while maintaining stronger financial accountability for the larger awards. The second issue is the funding guideline itself. Requests for funding have grown substantially over the years, and in recent years, the total amount requested has exceeded what the formula would generate. So council does have discretion to award more than the guideline, and it has done so. But that raises a broader policy question about whether the current funding model continues to make sense. That question is particularly relevant when we look at healthcare funding. The city recently completed the healthcare planning assessment, which included recommendations for creating a more predictable and sustainable approach to supporting healthcare in Unalaska. Those recommendations don't fit particularly well within the existing community support grant guidelines or the structure of the program. We're not asking council to make all of those decisions tonight, and Cameron will walk you through the history of the program and the current guidelines and the audit requirements and the funding issues. Ultimately, we're looking for council's directions on whether the audit requirements should be revised and, more broadly, how council would like staff to approach the future funding structure, particularly whether healthcare requests should continue within the existing program or be considered through a separate program. So the goal tonight is to get that policy direction so staff can come back with specific revisions to the guidelines, and if council wishes to pursue a framework for a separate healthcare program. So that's really kind of two issues that we're looking at tonight. And Cameron, I'll invite Cameron Dean, our planning director, to come up. He's got a PowerPoint presentation, and we'll walk you through all the details. But later in the evening, if council is ready, if you could have a directive with some direction on those two issues, or maybe just one of them. Maybe you're only ready to proceed on the audit requirement, and maybe the other one requires more time. But if you're ready on either of those, we would appreciate some direction. Thanks. Go ahead, Cameron.
Okay. Yep. Thanks for that introduction, Margie. Margie said two topics, audit requirements and the funding guideline. I think when we pull up the PowerPoint, let's start with the audit requirements. And maybe I'll preface all of this that we periodically review these guidelines. Usually we do it a little bit later in the year. Typically applications are coming out in November or December, and we try to get those updated guidelines out right before the next application cycle. These questions that we have are a little bit broader, so we wanted to start this discussion a little bit earlier and get some guidance for council, because we'll need some time to work on any changes if you decide you want changes. Okay, so starting with the audit requirements, currently all recipients of more than $25,000 need to submit an audit annually. That requirement has not been changed since at least 2011. This spring, we got a request from one of the recipients that essentially said that the audit had become very burdensome for them. Costs for the services have been increasing, and that they were procuring an audit basically just to satisfy our grant, for it wasn't required for any of their other funding sources. I reached out to all of the recipients to see how they're working with the current audit requirements, and we got a mix of responses, but there was definitely a group of recipients in there that are just doing an audit for this grant. A lot of the larger recipients already need to have audit requirements for their other funding, so it's less burdensome for them, but for some of them is a cost that they wouldn't be paying were it not for this grant program. And that can be fairly high. I think one of the organizations that responded said that it would cost approximately 13% of their total ask from the city. So those costs have definitely been increasing. There's a couple different levels of engagement for these types of financial services that provide assurance like an audit. So audit at the top level, providing the most assurance. Below that, we have a review and then agreed upon procedures engagement. After talking through this with our finance department, we're recommending moving a lot of organizations over to just requiring a review rather than an audit. So it does still provide some assurance, but it should be cheaper and less burdensome for those organizations. Next slide, please, Scarlett. So this is what we're proposing. First, for that $25,000 cutoff, that hasn't been changed since 2011. There's been a lot of inflation since then. So that $25,000 in 2011 is about $38,000 now. So we're proposing raising that limit to $40,000. Below that, any organization, they wouldn't need to submit an audit. It's just do basic end-of-year-only reporting. Basically, that's we didn't have any that fall under that this year, but that would be like ASFA, Little League, Aleutian Arts Council, those types of requests typically fall under that limit. Then for organizations requesting more than $40,000, recommend splitting that up. So between $40,000 and $300,000, instead of requiring an audit, requiring just a review to make that a little bit simpler for them. For larger organizations requesting over $300,000, they'll often need to have that audit anyway. So the city grant program isn't adding a lot of overhead to them. So we'd be keeping the audit requirement for that and not making any changes. Next slide, please. And this is kind of how that breaks down. The $40,000 is the line on the left. We didn't have any applicants below that. $300,000 is the line in the middle. That's a very arbitrary number I came up with, but it seemed like it split up the clusters of awards that we give out. We have a lot from in the like $60,000 to $200,000 range, and then we have these larger organizations with IFHS on the high end. Let me stop there and ask, do you have any questions about that before we get into the funding guideline?
We got the hand up, Councilman Longo. Doobie.
Yeah, when you say review, I'm just curious what that would entail. What the thoughts are, is you guys would review financial statements, or is there somebody else that would, or just kind of explain that a little bit?
It's still a third party. It's just a step down from an audit. And I'm not going to pretend to be a finance person. The finance director did say he could step in if we get a question where you really want to get into the nitty-gritty between an audit and a review. But it's still, it's not us reviewing it. It's still a third party. It's still providing some assurance. Essentially, all we're doing now is looking at those audits that are submitted and identifying any findings or anything of note and giving those to you in the summary.
If you don't mind, I will step in here because I had the same question myself, Councilmember Luby. And an audit is, as you probably know, a comprehensive deep dive examination that provides a high level of assurance and a formal opinion on financial accuracy, requiring internal control testing and third-party confirmations. A review is a more narrow engagement, and it's a more affordable inquiry using analytical procedures and management questions that offers only a limited assurance. So the core differences are the level of assurance. Of course, an audit is a higher level of assurance. And the internal controls. An audit tests internal controls and assesses fraud risk. Reviews don't evaluate internal controls or fraud risk. And then the testing and verification. It says that audits verify transactions with third-party confirmations and source documents. Reviews rely mostly on analytical procedures and management inquiries. So it's, just like Cameron said, a step down from an audit. But it's done by an auditing firm, a third party, not city staff.
Councilman Shastin.
Yeah, thank you. Just so I'm clear on this as well. So a review would still identify deficiencies in the spending practices of the organization, correct? And it would be clear that there was a deficiency?
Yeah, the level of assurance is just lower.
Okay.
It says audits provide a high assurance via an official auditor's opinion, and reviews provide limited assurance, stating nothing looks wrong.
And to follow up on that, speaking of this this tiered approach specifically, I support it. I like the idea of the tiered approach. I think it's much more reasonable than having every organization go through an audit. One thing I would be interested in, if a resolution does come back, which I would support for this item specifically, and probably really this item exclusively, is the use of a the use of the God, the lower level audit. Tell me again what it was called again.
A review.
A review. Yeah, I was having a hiccup there. The review being the primary, but if there is a discrepancy found, being able to trigger an audit prior to full funding. Does that make sense? Meaning, if the organization does a review and administration finds a discrepancy in that review, that we can request an audit administratively. Does that?
I think I would talk with our finance director about that and see if that makes sense. And get a little bit more information on it. The clerk is saying something.
Sure. Mr. Sharp has raised his hand, so
after you. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you very much. So an audit and a review, they both provide some level of assurance to the entity that's being audited or reviewed. And they are all completed by an independent audit firm or independent firm that's not associated otherwise with the entity that's been subject to the engagement. With respect to a review versus an audit and the specific question regarding if there are discrepancies found, we do not engage the third party to perform those services. We can ask separately for a more thorough examination of our transactions that revolve around the funding provided by the city, which is similar to what the agreed upon procedures would do. Does that help at all?
Mr. Mayor, can I clarify?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I understand that the city does not do the audit or the review. My concern, though, is if administration does bring something back to this council and we do codify it through a resolution or through a coded ordinance, that we would want to be clear that we reserve the right to request an audit, or else the administration unilaterally requesting an audit wouldn't. Because they would have met the requirement. But I think, you know, thinking about this a little bit more, I may be getting ahead of myself. If there is a discrepancy found in a review, that is a discrepancy nonetheless, and the only thing the audit would show would that there indeed would be a discrepancy, right? Or the audit would show further discrepancies potentially.
I can't tell you exactly the format that would be in, but I would imagine if there was problems with a particular grantee's financial books, that's going to hamper their ability to get to qualify for grants from the city in the future, right? So in your guidelines, Cameron, what does it present? Is there anything in the current guidelines talking about what happens if they don't have a clean audit?
No, not explicitly. So we require an audit be completed if you receive funding from the city by a certain time. Following the completion of that award. It doesn't specify, like, oh, if there's findings on this, then X happens. It's just something that we provide to council for your reference. You can factor that into your decision for continued funding. We would, if something does come up, it wouldn't necessarily, not from an audit, if something comes up during the year that we're concerned about, we do have the option to suspend funding because we do that in monthly disbursements.
So I like the discussion, but I getting out of this and talked a little bit about it this morning, but the review itself, if there are no deficiencies, that should satisfy the city. Now, if there is a deficiency kicks into an audit, we can, as the grant giver to this entity, any entity, decide at the next go around until we get an audit and the discrepancy has been cleaned, we can then possibly move forward with a grant. So that's our only option, in my opinion. We don't want to get involved in their business. We just want to know that they're safe, spending the money properly, and there's no illegal transactions. So the city council has an obligation to get that information. And if they're still not fully satisfied, they could decline or not give any further grants to that entity. That would be my take on what's happening. I do agree that those audits are about two-thirds of a grant to get a complete audit that we've been requesting all these years. It is a lot of money to get an audit, getting people out here. And as a community, and Jim knows this well too, that usually try to use the same auditor, but it's still the cost of an audit. That makes it very hard for them to utilize the full grant. Further question, Councilman Coleman?
Yeah, has legal counsel looked at this? Is this just our financial department that has reviewed tearing down?
I don't think we run it by the city attorney.
I don't know. I mean, it just seems like a liability thing to me in a sense that, you know, granting monies and accountability, it may not be within their realm. It was just curious if they had been contacted on that.
They have not. If we come to that and think we should, you know, the finance director and Cameron and I will talk about it, and if we think we should need a legal review, we will proceed to that. But like you mentioned, that's not really their bailiwick.
Okay. This is all per the city says it's our grant. We can set kind of the rules and regulations then. There's
right.
Really nothing that.
Okay. Correct.
I'm curious about the tiering up to 40,000. Please remind me again, the change from 25,000 to 40,000 without any, you based that on what? It's 2011 was the last time it was set to 25,000, and you went to 40,000 because of?
Basically inflation. That 40,000 is roughly equivalent to 25,000 in 2011 dollars.
Has the request from the smaller groups increased that much in the last 15 years?
No, but I'd say we really haven't seen a lot of requests from smaller groups. I think just from talking to people who have applied in the past, that barrier, that crossover for when, you know, we have these additional reporting requirements, we have the audit requirements, it is a barrier for smaller organizations that they just don't have the capacity to do that. So they've tried to keep their requests under that $25,000 line.
Okay. And follow up. Is doing this tier system, or I guess with the review specifically, is that going to bring any additional burden to administration? Because you're looking at different types of audits versus reviews versus looking at what their returns are or what their statements are?
I think us reviewing an audit statement versus a review statement is not going to be any more burden for us.
Okay.
And I think Cameron just confirmed that.
Okay.
Councilman Tungle?
The review, I guess, the council will review everything anyway before approving it. So I don't think there's anything changes in there. Everything got to be reviewed by the council anyway before approving it, right?
Yeah, you would, just like you see the audits now, you would also get that review in your packet. Those need to be in by February of each year, so you'd have time to look at that before deciding on the next year's grant. And if there was something really noteworthy in it, we would notify you as soon as we got it, so you can make a decision about suspending a, you know, ongoing grant as well.
Mm-hmm. So on the tier B, we're just eliminating some of the audit instead of because you know it's I think I like this. Myself, I like the way you guys did this. I think over 300 is doing that. You know, this will be good, I think. And I think we get to save some money on this one. Thank you.
Councilman Luby.
Yeah, I think it's a good program to do it this way as well. And it is a burden to, because a full audit is really in depth, and as the city knows because they go through it as well, it can take a lot of extra time. And the review that you're speaking of, because it is an outside auditor, and most of the nonprofits, I believe, use Altman Rogers anyway, I think that they basically are doing the same thing when they review. It's just they're not, like, pulling that invoice and make, you know, they're not going into depth. But I still think that it catches, it would catch inappropriate spending, or somebody that's not, you know, even keeping books correctly, you know. I think even with just the review, so I know what kind of review you're talking about, and I think that would be good. So I like this, and it probably would reduce a little bit of what they're asking for, because they wouldn't have to include the cost of that audit in their request as well. So overall, it's going to save the community taxpayers money that we're giving to them too. So I like it, and I think it's great just the way it is. We have it.
Councilman Coleman.
Why the $300,000?
It's arbitrary.
That's a problem for me. Sure. I mean, hey, let's throw a number out there. It would be nice if it was a little more analytical to that.
Sure.
So, like, I understand. So I asked you about the $40,000, right? Because you inflation, and that's kind of like ballparking. But that I would like a little more, like, defined. Why $300,000?
Yeah, we can do a little more rationale for that. And I think when I was picking that, I was looking specifically at FY27 and how that would split everything up. We could go back historically, and you know, we've got the data. I think we can come up with a good rationale for a number.
Because I think the level of commitment for people to doing, you know, it's not so much to me what we're receiving in requests. It is maybe more about financial liability or so. I mean, just to be prudent, I mean, that's why I like why the number, and why are we discerning from one possible group to another and what their financial obligations are for reporting versus another. I mean, a dollar's a dollar. And to me, that's still important that it's all accounted for. So I understand the basis for this. I'm not necessarily opposed to it. I just would like why 300,000 is a little more factual, or understanding why that's a number that we feel like that's the cutoff that it should go to the full audit for that amount.
Sure, we can do that.
Councilman Luby.
Yeah, and just kind of going to that, I never even thought about why that number was chosen. But, you know, you talked about some of the organizations have to do full audits for other grants as well, and different programs that they have. And maybe it's a cutoff if they're only doing it for the city. Maybe that, you know, if they're already doing a full audit, maybe that is the determination that they present that full audit. If they're not, then,
oh, sure.
You know, because if they have a lot of money and a lot of different grants, they're going to be required to do a complete audit. The smaller the organization, you know, and just because they need more money for the amount of staff they have, or if they want to provide health insurance, that might, you know, step that dollar amount up, but it may still be a burden on them. And so I wouldn't be opposed to, you know, doing a financial review for everybody, unless they already are doing an audit for other funding, maybe. And you could make a threshold there too somewhere, but I would be okay with that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Further questions, comments? Okay. Thank you, Cameron.
Okay, so
continue.
Next part of this is the funding guideline. I'll start with what our current guideline is. This has changed a little bit over the years, and I'll talk about that in a bit, but it's been more or less similar. 3.5% the average general fund revenue for the last 5 years, as well as the current fund balances for the bed tax and tobacco excise tax funds. And those special funds have to go to particular purposes. The general fund can obviously go to any of the applicants. So this is a graph that shows the history since 2019 for this program. The colored areas represent the funding amount as prescribed by that guideline that was in place during that fiscal year. The black line is what was actually awarded. So you can see there's kind of a steady increase, but then we've got that big jump in FY25, and that's, you probably remember, like the IFHS's increased request that year. You'll also see the amount dictated by the guideline increases a lot that year. That's the first year that we started using the accumulated balances in the tobacco excise tax rather than just single year revenues. So a lot had built up in that over the years. We spent most of it that year to fund that higher request. So that's why it, you know, drops down again and continues lower the next 2 years after that. But requests have, well, awards have remained pretty steady since then. So last 2 years, we've had this gap. Slide, please. Splitting this up a different way, looking at the share of healthcare versus all of the other applicants in the program. And for the purposes of this slide, I'm calling healthcare the entities that are receiving funding from the Tobacco Excise Tax Fund, so IFHS and APIA. I know, like, USAVE, the Senior Center, are providing services that are in, you know, similar veins. So there's a lot of different ways you could slice this up, but this is just how we're doing it for the sake of discussion. And you can see in that when IFHS increased the request, significantly increased the share of healthcare relative to the rest of the program, to the point that healthcare is almost half of it now, and has been consistently. This slide is a little misleading, though. So if you go to the next slide, please, Scarlett. Because there's a lot of support that the city's given out for healthcare apart from the community support grant program. So that's why I was just showing the CSG. Essentially, since the IFHS started, there's been other sources of city funding going in there. So recently, $500,000 emergency funding in 2017, $500,000 loan in 2019. This doesn't get counted in that formula discussion that we've been having because it's not included in the community support grant program, but is other city funding that is going towards healthcare. And next slide, please. So we wanted to talk through a couple different ways that council could proceed with this. The first is not do anything, and this is completely fine. Like Margie was saying, it is a guideline. Council can elect to make awards above or below that. It is purely there to guide council as you make those decisions. So if that's working for you, feel like it's a useful metric, we can keep doing this. We don't expect any, you know, without a significant increase in revenue or a decrease in the requests, we expect that we'll continue getting requests that are above the guideline amount now. But we can keep doing that. That's fine. Next slide, please. The second option is the simple one if we want to change things, and that's just change the formula. So we could increase the general fund's percentage, for example, and that would be really easy for us to implement. The last one is a lot more complicated, and that's kind of why when to have this conversation in August instead of November, right before awards come out, and that would be to spin off all the healthcare entities into a separate program. So I'll get a little more detail of what that would look like potentially, but essentially we'd have two separate programs. We could right-size the funding formula for the remaining community support grant applicants so that it, you know, makes sense for the awards that we're receiving, and then come up with something else for healthcare entities. Obvious con here is additional administrative overhead. This is a lot to set up, and it's an additional program for us to be administering. Next slide, please. So if you remember from the healthcare planning assessment that we presented recently, there are a couple of recommendations. One was finding, you know, a more predictable funding model for healthcare entities to help with their long-term planning. And then the other was to start stewarding healthcare in the community a little bit more than the city is now, to help promote sustainability and efficiency in healthcare here. We can't really, the current program is not set up to do that. It has the same benchmarks for every organization that applies. We don't really have that mechanism right now to start to encourage those changes. So if we do spin off these entities into a different program, that would give us an opportunity to develop benchmarks for the program that are specific to healthcare. So we could tie those into the recommendations from the healthcare planning assessment, or use other benchmarks as appropriate. As I envision this, we could work, should work with the healthcare entities in creating that program to make sure it's actually viable for them. It addresses those problems with long-term planning and sustainability. But obviously this is, we would need to put a lot together for this. And I don't have all the answers for that. I'll figure it out right now. That's why we're talking about it now. But our goal, if council did want to proceed in this general direction, would be to work with all these entities and provide more specific recommendations to you for what that program will look like in time for next year's grant cycle, so in November. So that is all I have. I'm happy to answer questions, though, as you discuss these.
Thank you, Cameron. Councilman Shastin?
Yeah, thank you. You know, overall, I think I would support the tiered approach, probably as is. I'd be interested to hear the question that Sherry and the others asked for as well. The healthcare planning assessment, I remember when we brought that before council a number of months ago, or maybe it was earlier in this year or late last year. From what I recall, council as a whole in general was not necessarily in support of the presentation we had, and no point do we actually adopt the healthcare planning assessment that was presented to us, or did we indicate we wanted to use it as a guiding document in establishing funding? And I'm going off my recollection. I haven't reviewed that since that meeting. I think one of the recommendations they also had in there was like base everything off of a community paramedicine program or something and hire a city employee to coordinate healthcare in Alaska. Just some really kind of wonky stuff. So I'm not excited about using that as a benchmark or a reference when we are trying to figure out what how we're going to fund the clinic and healthcare in Alaska. I mean, I think maintaining a status quo is okay right now. We do need to address it. When you have such a large, like an $800,000 hit to the nonprofit funding, and you're regularly exceeding the caps that are in place in large part because of that $800,000 hit, there needs to be some mechanism to address that. I think that mechanism is probably that special designation like you presented earlier, going back to like 97 when the clinic was built here up on the hill. And then periodically throughout the last number of years as well, 30 years or 35 years, whatever it's been. I look at the clinic as being an essential service, and the funding for the clinic as being critical to the viability of this community as a whole, no different than power in the building or utilities that we have in general. So I think that's critical, and I really want to stay away from anything that could compromise that. I support funding the clinic. I'm not excited when I start seeing the healthcare planning assessment being used as the benchmark for decisions that we're being asked to make, especially with the feedback that was given during the presentation on the healthcare planning assessment. So I guess I'm looking forward to hearing what the rest of the council has to say as well. But right now I'm leaning toward supporting the audit requirements as written with more information pending and status quo. Again, I'm hearing other stuff.
Yeah, Councilman Shastin, what is more current information pending? What is that you're talking about?
I think Councilman Lubian Coleman asked planning to bring back information on where the $300,000 benchmark came from, $40,000 benchmark, and so on. and really kind of refining that as it relates to the audit requirements.
Good. Thank you. Councilman Booby.
Yeah, I think it was been discussed a couple of times that possibly having the clinic separate from our grants, our normal grants. And I support having a separate line item for the clinic, and how we create that would be, something would have to be worked out. But I think of the clinic just like I think of the school. It is an essential service in the community, and it's something that we need here. And so I support funding the clinic. And then there's been a lot of different talk with the sales tax and things like that, too. And I think there's probably other ways we could, probably come up with a different program for that. And so I support the idea of separating that out from the grants, just like we would do the school. Or, as we talked about in, one of the things in the sales tax is we create one fund for all of them. Is another way to do it, but to be able to protect those entities, whether it's the school, the clinic, or our community grants, our nonprofits. So I think there is a lot to work out with all of that, and so it's going to take a little more time to think about, but I do agree it kind of it skews that grant program unless we just change the funding amount so that it covers it. So anyway, I'll hear what other ones have to say.
Okay, thank you. I had a question. Is that the health planning assessment, is that a committee that we have active, or are they just idle? But you know,
that project's complete.
Pardon?
That project's complete. So it's not, that report was delivered to council's feedback and then provided the final to you a couple months ago. But that's not, that work's not going on still.
Okay. In a way, I kind of support what Councilman Lewis mentioned or discussed, but I'm not clear. I'm not fully in support of that type of separating the clinic from funding era. Look at the chart we had earlier that Aaron brought up, over $2 million in free land to the clinic, and we seem to be back to where we started again. I'll be hesitant to go down that road any further without some kind of a plan that seems to be in the assessment program of our, what's needed in this community 5 to 10 years from now, not just next year. So now we got a lot of work to do with the health program, in my opinion. Councilman Coleman?
So the 2019 $500,000 loan was repaid. That's correct.
That's my understanding.
Yes. Okay. So just so you know that they did repay that. I'd like to, again, it's a good discussion to have because, the community evolves, and just because you did it back when the clinic was built, or the new one, doesn't mean that, it's working now. Obviously, they're expanding to try to meet their goals of being self-sufficient, but you know how that goes. It's healthcare. So I'd like to give a moment to review the planning assessment again myself, too. This is a pretty big step, and to make a determination at this time. So I'll have to think about this one. But there's already some council discussion and already some thinking about the future needs of our nonprofits, and particularly the healthcare, and how can we, as a community, help fund and support that entity. So I think the wheels are already kind of turning, so to speak, and I appreciate you bringing it, and the city is looking at other ways to procure better funding for them, and so that it is a reliable revenue source, in a sense. That's great. Who doesn't? I mean, it's hard to build a program, period, and not know where the future things are coming from. And, you know, healthcare, how you can't, you just can't turn your back on this. Like the school, right? It's your, you know, school is your future, and, you know, healthcare is an important part of your future if you want to have one. So, again, I don't really, I need to chew on this one for sure. But thank you for bringing it forward and helping us kind of think about these things, and hopefully get some feedback from the community. Because, again, you know, it's, I'd like to hear from what people have to say, for sure, always, but this one in particular, because it may mean, you know, a bigger part of our budget, you know, if we want to change the percentage or a special fund or a special source, or, and I had a couple of my ideas myself, so maybe we can come up with a plan.
Just one more. Councilman Luby.
On the healthcare assessment, I think I read in there that what we're currently doing doesn't meet that assessment. Is that correct?
I mean, it identified deficiencies in what we're doing now. And I think the big one that as relates to this is that these organizations can't count on funding year to year. It's kind of an arbitrary decision of whether that request is going to be granted or not. So it makes long-term planning much harder.
So just kind of, if you can remember, remind me, did they have a suggestion in there of what we should do moving forward?
I mean, come up with a way to a more stable funding mechanism for it. Not getting into specifics, obviously, where that funding would come from or what that would be, but just something, if the city is going to be providing support, make sure that is predictable and stable.
And one last little question there. Is this part of the planning that we're going to meet tomorrow about? Is healthcare included in part of the future plan of Unalaska?
It's not one of the topics we're focusing on. It absolutely is a topic in, like, Unalaska future planning more broadly, but yeah, it's not one of the ones we're focusing on tomorrow.
Okay. I was just curious because then I thought maybe you might have had some community input through that process too. So, okay, that's all I have for now.
Yeah. So with the expansion of this clinic, that should help bring more revenue, right? Yeah, I'm with the expansion, there'll be more services provided to the community. An extension for the addition to the clinic that they're building right now. Is that something I?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. I don't want to speak for the clinic on specifics about that, though.
Yeah.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Dawn Johnson, IFHS CEO. So the expansion that we are undergoing now is going to have new exam rooms, emergency rooms, and an imaging department, all of which we have now, but these will be built closer to a hospital grade standard for us. Services are not, there's no additional services with the expansion that we're creating. The additional service that we will be offering to the community is the opening of the pharmacy when that happens in a couple of months.
Well, we're getting away with the dispensary, and we got to have a pharmacy.
Correct. Okay. It's going to be more like a retail pharmacy.
But yes. There's no additional services with this expansion on the clinic.
There is not.
Thank
not
you.
At this time.
Thank you.
Good.
Questions? You got some more?
No, that's all I had.
That's it. Yeah. Thank you, Chairman.
Okay. Thank you.
You have a lot to go through today. Thanks. Now we will receive public comment, 3 minutes, and discussion regarding community support grant program guidelines.
Hi, I'm Lynn Crane, USAFE. And this is a really small thing and it might seem very petty, but there's a requirement that says that all promotional or printed material for any program funded in whole or in part through the City of Unalaska Community Support Program shall include the following statement, quote, this program is partially funded by the citizens of the City of Unalaska, end quote. I believe that should say taxpayers of the City of Unalaska. It isn't just the citizens here that pay money that support all these programs, but like I said, it's a small thing to share that.
Okay, thank you. Any further comments, public, in chambers? Let's see. Next, the city clerk, we have written comments or anyone on Teams or phone wish to speak?
No, sir. No one in Teams and no written comments submitted.
Okay, thank you. Includes request a motion and a second to return to regular session.
I move we return to regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Tuggle to return to regular session. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, we're back in regular session at 7:01 p.m. Next item on our agenda is consent agenda, in which there is one item absent a request by council members to move the item to the regular agenda for discussion. The consent agenda is adopted without discussion and with a single vote. Item for consent agenda is resolution 2026-48, amending the 2026 real and personal property tax rolls and certify the 2026 supplementary real property tax roll. Now, a motion and second to adopt the consent agenda.
Move to adopt the consent agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Longo. I request a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Louie?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
With this vote, the council has adopted resolution 2026-48 on a roll call vote of 5 yes, 0 nays. We're now on regular agenda. Persons wishing to speak on the regular agenda item must sign up with the city clerk. There's a 3-minute time limit. The first item is resolution 2026-49, ratifying the 5-year master service agreement with GCI Education Service Order and GCI Managed Firewall Service Order for Library Public Internet Service. I have a motion and a second to adopt the resolution 2026-49.
I move to adopt resolution 2026-49.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Longo, second by Councilman Chastain. I'll turn this over to City Manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As the title of the resolution implies, the resolution 49 will ratify a 5-year agreement, the Master Services Agreement with GCI, as well as the Education Service Order and the Managed Firewall Agreements. Recently, staff determined that the approval process completed in 2023 for these agreements did not fully align with city policies because we did not receive approval from City Council. We asked the city attorney to review the matter, who recommended we seek ratification of the agreements from Council, even if it is after the fact. We're pleased with GCI's performance under the agreements. and don't want to put the agreements or the related grant funding in any jeopardy. For that reason, adoption of the resolution is recommended because that will bring the agreements into compliance with our procurement code.
Okay, thank you. Is there any council discussion regarding resolution 2026-49? City clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
Thank you. I'll restate the motion to adopt resolution 2026-49. I'll request a roll call vote.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
On a roll call vote of 5 yeses and 0 nays, the council has adopted resolution 2026-49. Next item is item B, ordinance 2026-16, creating a fiscal year 2027 budget amendment number 3 to increase capital outlay in public works facility maintenance by $21,375, reduce transfers to governmental capital projects by $2,197,563, and reduce the general fund appropriated fund balance by $2,176,188. I have a motion and a second to introduce 2026-16 ordinance scheduled for public hearing second reading on August 25th.
Mr. Mayor, I move to introduce ordinance 2026-16 and schedule it for public hearing and second reading on August 25th, 2026.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Chastain, seconded by Councilman Longo. I'll turn this over to Acting City Manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The proposed budget amendment corrects two administrative errors that were made during the fiscal year 27 budget process. As a result of these errors, the originally adopted budget included an excess appropriation of fund balance while providing insufficient budgetary capacity for the Public Works Facilities Maintenance Department's capital outlay. This ordinance doesn't result in any additional appropriation. In fact, it results in returning more than $2 million to the general fund. Tonight's action is to introduce the ordinance and schedule it for public hearing and second reading, which is the staff recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Council discussion, questions or comments on ordinance 2026-16? Councilman Coleman?
Great. In layman's term, could you explain what happened?
Yes. So if you look at the memo, I'll ask the clerk to put it up on page one. So you see those under the background in discussion. The capital, normally for vehicles, when we're entering the amounts for our rolling stock purchases that council has approved, we include the unit price as well as a 25% contingency to cover cost increases from the time we got the bid into when we actually buy the vehicle, because it's never exactly the same, right? So we always add that in there. And unfortunately, that was not done. And then under the transfers to governmental projects, we incorrectly included items that were in the Public Works operating budget. So what we did is those amounts, those three amounts listed there, the rolling stock replacement plan, the building engineering, and the ongoing roof and structural repairs were included in both the capital outlay and the Public Works operating budget. So we kind of put them in there twice by mistake. And we just would like to correct that mistake.
Oh, okay. That's not the way I read it. That's just why I asked. So,
Okay, so it was a double accounting as opposed to it wasn't accounted for in the budget, even though we had approved it.
Correct.
Through capital, through the CMMP.
It unfortunately got entered in two different places instead of just one. So that's why we're returning a little more than $2 million back to the general fund.
Okay. Good. Before next session, I would like to see a revised budget based off. We've had several budget amendments so far. So just kind of to update me on where we're at to date before the next meeting, it'd be great to see a updated one.
Would you like to wait until after this budget amendment passes and then it'll have all of the changes in it?
No, no. I'd like to see.
So you want to see before the next meeting?
Yes, ma'am.
An updated budgeted document that includes
the last
the two budget amendments that we've already done,
please.
Okay, we can do that.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Finished council discussion. City clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
I'll restate the motion to adopt ordinance 2026-16. I'll request a roll call vote.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
With this vote, the council has introduced and scheduled ordinance 2026-16 to public hearing second reading on August 25th, 2026. We're on item 13, council directives to the city manager. If there are any directives, they need to be by motion, second, and a roll call vote. Do you have any directives? None. Next item, 14, community input and announcements. None. This is the final opportunity to provide information to the council or make announcements. 3 minute time limit. Anyone in chambers? Anyone on Zoom or telephone?
No one in Zoom, sir. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to let the public know that our candidacy period is open until August 21st. That's a Saturday. And so interested people who would like to run for office for either school board or city council could stop by our office to pick up a candidacy packet. And it has to be turned in on Friday, August 21st. And they have until Monday to make any changes to that packet. And also, Mayor, I'd like to let everyone know that we are doing early and absentee voting right now for primary. So if you guys are going to be gone on August 18, you can stop by the clerk's office to vote ahead of time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate the information. Let's see. More items. Having completed all items on the agenda, we are adjourned at 7:14.
And we'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, Unalaska.
At the other meeting. At the library.
So, folks, we are going to have a special council meeting tomorrow night at the library to discuss the comprehensive plan. So if you would like, you can show up to the meeting and provide comments too. 6 p.m. at the library.
Thank you.